Hey, Klaatu, you may want to get out your fanboy and you can swing it at me if I get too gushy here. But I do want to take the opportunity to talk to Cornomial and about Crunch Bang.
No,
And
actually,
if Cornomial, if you're
I was about to ask the same thing because I don't know. I've heard of Crunch Bang. I know next to nothing about it except that I think I heard it had an open box desktop by default. That's all I know.
Oh, for real? Cornomial, are you on? Are you near your mic right now?
Yeah, hi.
All right, great. Yeah, I just want to say I not only use Crunch Bang on a daily basis, but I use it and appreciate it on a daily basis. Every time I've got it installed on my EPC 701, and it's in the kitchen. And every morning, when I get home from work, I turn it on and I start up G-Potter in that thing. And every morning, I plug an SD card into it and load my podcasts on there. And every day, I appreciate it, that 701 has a use, and I appreciate the work that's gone into it. And since Statler came out and I put it on it, I have had exactly one problem with that machine. And I cannot say enough good things about Crunch Bang and about the work you've done. So thank you for that.
Hey, thanks. I appreciate it. Yeah. Kind words.
And I
Oh, yeah.
just like to butt in here because that's the way I am. These Philip and Becky are two of the nicest people you might ever have met. I know I met them at Og Camp, my only social event of the year, and they took me under the wing. All the interviews that were taken at the outside were all organized by Cornominal. Went in, got people, brought them out, brought out beer as well, which is also nice, and lined up all those interviews, and there's still more to come. So a big thanks.
Hey, no problem. You were quite well. You were amazing at Og Camp. You were like a casting robot. You were just non-stop. It was quite a sight to see.
And I'm heading over to Fostem. We have a table over there as well. I haven't started bugging people about that yet, but I'm looking for some people to come and give us a hand on the table at
I
Fostem.
want Philip to go to Fostem, but he won't go.
Come on! We can do the table with me.
Dude, for
Gotta go to
real?
Fostem, yeah.
Take me to Fostem, Philip.
All right, people. We need somebody to send in some money. So go to crunchbang.org, press the donate button, and donate. No, shut up. Mute him. Mute him. Press the donate button and send him some cash. He doesn't need that much. It's just to get from the UK to
Yeah, we'll do a
Belgium.
Kickstarter if you have to.
Yeah, let's do
Jeez.
this.
No, you don't want to do that. Fosdem, it's I don't know. It's quite intimidating. I think there's quite a lot of like proper serious hackers there, and I can't mingle in those circles.
No, you'll be coming. You'll be helping me on the HPR table. You'll be just a HPR correspondent. That's all.
This is
Cool.
this
That's
is.
all.
Yeah, I
That's
could
fine,
do that
'cause
actually. I could be a HPR pimp.
I'm as intimidated by you being a proper hacker compared to me.
Yeah, no kidding. This is the guy who put together the OS that makes my EPC useful, and you're intimidated by like hackers. That's like somebody listening now saying they're intimidated to post a show on HPR.
Philip's very self-depreciating.
Yeah, it's to be fair, Crunch Bang. It's I mean, I love hacking on Crunch Bang, but I think I do feel kind of uncomfortable accepting any credit for it because, fair, it is basically it's Debian and OpenBox, and a lot of the time I just feel like maybe a bit of a cocktail shaker. I just shake a cocktail and maybe just stick everything together and make it work well. But a lot of the hacking and stuff is that's all done by the professionals.
Fair enough, but if I walk over to a liquor cabinet right now and just start pouring in things that I like until I think I have everything I like in there and shake it up, that's a nasty, nasty recipe. It takes real skill to mix a drink, and it takes real skill to mix a distro, and you can't downsell that.
Well, real skill or good luck.
I'd rather be lucky than good any day.
So
Amen.
what is involved with what you're doing then, Cornomo? I mean, like, what do you sit down and do? You're remixing the packages and then putting them together such that they create a live boot that will install. Is that sort of what you do?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean, you've not used Crunchbang, so if I just give you a brief explanation as to what it is. It is, I mean, basically, it is Debian, but with my own choice of packages on, you know, on top of a minimal install. So I'll put OpenBox on, and then basically my favorite applications, and then what I try and do is produce a finished image which I can install on any of my systems that will, you know, that will just work for me. So you know, if anybody else uses it and they like it, that's, you know, that's brilliant. But, you know, if somebody uses it and they don't like it, you know, it's not really a problem. I'm not going to lose any sleep over it. But yeah, I think what I try to do is package up, maybe do some modifications to Debian, which the Debian distribution can't actually do for reasons of, you know, they like to be free open source distribution, whereas I'm a bit more of a pragmatist, and so, for example, I will ship certain Wi-Fi drivers on there, which are proprietary binary blobs, and other things as well, such as, I think you were talking about Liblane earlier, the MP3, so that works out of the box and it's nice and easy.
And why not, actually, if you're in a jurisdiction that doesn't support it? Well, one thing,
what
actually...
What about the post-install script as well? Because Philip, or a lot of the users, they really like on the latest release the post-install script. And you did script that yourself, Philip.
That is actually what I wanted to say, Becky, but thank you very much for cutting me off.
Yeah,
I just point out that Becky's actually now giving me two fingers. We're sat on the settee, same settee, and she's sticking us...
Yeah, I was going to say it's more than just picking some packages, because I can do that. There's also the theming that goes on. There's the scripting that gets it to recognize everything. There's the config files that make it work. I mean, you know, I have sat down with other distributions and tried to get them to work on that EPC and spent days and days and days and not had anything that works as well as Crunchbang does out of the box. And that's just on an EPC with, you know, 600 megahertz processor. Put it on a real computer and it's really something.
That seems to be one of the big things that I've heard about Crunchbang is the ease of setup and yet the underlying power. So I guess that would probably be that setup script that they're talking about.
And I don't know, just to explain to some people, if you haven't installed Crunchbang, which you should do at least in a virtual machine, is after the login, does bare minimal install, you got some sensible questions. Do you want SSH installed? Here's what it is. Yes, no, boom. Do you want this installed? Shall I install OpenOffice? Do you want to go into more advanced things? It's yes, no. And the script is just there in the subdirectory, and you can edit it and have at it and rerun it at any time. Really a stroke of genius, and I don't know why more people don't do that.
He did it more for me because I'm so stupid when I'm doing my upgrades.
It sounds a little bit like some of Slackware's package helpers, like XWM config, package tool, things like that, where it kind of knows what you've got installed after your initial install. But if you ever need to go back and rerun anything, you can always do that.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I think probably like most users, I've got a bin directory full of, you know, full of completely random shell scripts. And so what I've tried to do with Crunchbang is, and it's purely for my own purpose, it's take these shell scripts and put them into, you know, well, place them within Crunchbang itself, so that, you know, every time I install Crunchbang, say on a new system, if I want to get up a LAMP stack really quickly, but not the default LAMP stack, which, say, comes with, you know, because you can do that through Debian itself via the task selector. There's, or task cell, is it, or something like that. Basically, the bash script will set up for my own, to my own preferences, which, you know, it's just little things which makes work easier. So it'll install, you know, for example, Apache and, you know, my SQL server and, you know, stuff like that. But then it'll go once that's installed, it'll go in and modify the config file so that things like mod rewrite work, and just little things, I think. And I think it's the little things sometimes which matter. So
it's definitely the little things that matter in a distro, because all of distros have the major things worked out. I mean, you know, Ubuntu had their 1,000 paper cuts project or whatever it was, but it's also the little things that a newbie like myself run into and have no clue where to look to resolve a problem, and sometimes don't even know how to ask for help or how to ask, you know, what direction to be pointed in. So it's definitely those little things.
I'm curious, Cornomo, how you dictate what you put into Crunchbang. I mean, are there times where you're maybe scripting something or setting it up to work a certain way, and you think, well, gee, what if not all the users want it that way? Like, you're almost deviating from sort of like upstream or something? Or do you just set it up literally, this is how I want it to work, and so that's how I'm going to make it work, and if people like that, then great. If they don't, then they don't have to use it. Is that like how do you make that call?
Yeah, it's pretty much as you just said. I mean, I don't think you can accommodate, you know, everybody. In fact, I know you can't accommodate everybody. So I think, you know, you just have to think to yourself, well, this is how I want it. It works for me. So if it works for me, it's going to work. Well, there's a good chance it'll work for somebody else. If it doesn't, then, you know, I can't help that. It doesn't matter what I do.
Got it.
Do you take it personal when people use the phrase benevolent dictator?
No, I'm quite thick-skinned. I don't really take anything very personally.
Nice. That was a term I remember hearing bandied about several years ago, an awful lot, especially when Ubuntu was starting to get a lot of popularity. People would say it about Shuttleworth, and occasionally they said it about that other dude with the fruit computer. But yeah, I think it works. I think it can work.
I'm not sure if I ever understood that term, to be honest. I mean, I know that I don't particularly like it, because I don't believe there's such a thing, but I mean, I don't think that any software project or any really project that you're organizing, that you're managing, there's got to be a project manager at the top. And I'm assuming that's what they mean by a benevolent dictator, but I'm not really sure what it means.
That's Becky.
yeah, well, it's just a dictator, you know, is not necessarily a bad who rules with an iron fist. It's a person who's been put in charge to make the hard decisions that a committee cannot make. I mean, that's its traditional definition when the Romans were using it. And, you know, they always saw it as a good thing. And it was like a weapon of last resort against, you know, a threat to society. So it's just who's been, you know, put in charge of that thing. And they are benevolent.
But in that sense, then every project has a benevolent dictator. I mean, Slackware has Pat. Debian has whoever their little, you know, their Debian person that they change every 3 years or whatever it is. You know, I mean, everything's got that. I don't see the point in that term.
Yeah, I see where you're going with that. I get that. I yield.
With Crunchbang, where it's just sort of a bit of a one-man project anyway, that surely by default would make him a benevolent dictator, because, you know, he's dictating to himself. It's his project.
But I guess in the sense that there's the ability to talk to this person who's making the distribution, to me that doesn't mean dictator to me. That means a project manager or project lead, something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, I wouldn't class myself as a benevolent dictator.
You know, wait. Would you say you're a dictator then, if not benevolent?
No. I sometimes refer to myself as a project lead, but to be fair, you know, it's just a project. It's, you know, it's not, I don't think we really need to get that serious about it.
And also, if ever you've actually been onto the Crunchbang forums, you'll see actually that we do take a lot of input from the community. Crunchbang is more about the community.
Which makes it fit right in here.
Yeah, it's a fair point. I mean, to be fair, the Crunchbang community is brilliant. And we've got some forums set up, and the majority, well, not the majority, but, you know, a lot of users on the Crunchbang forums.
Yes, we are sort of losing him.
No, this is something that happens, Ken, it happens to you a lot too, and you don't notice it, where you're a great physical distance from the server. It's something about buffer kind of like running out and the audio will die for a good 5 to 10 seconds. And when it picks up again, it's right where your word broke off. So it's just traffic, you know, network traffic, the packets being rerouted. It happens all the time. So if it does happen to somebody, just hold on for a minute.
I think it's a resync of something.
Yeah. And
it happens.
Yeah. And with the multi-track recording, I can cut that silence out and the word goes back together perfectly in the recording afterwards. So sorry. Yeah. Sorry to distract.
That's okay. Well, I think we were talking about Fedora, were we not?
Yes, you were saying how great the Fedora community was when they bailed and came over Crunchbang.
No, Philip's right in the fact that, like I say, a lot of the Crunchbang community, they don't actually run Crunchbang. And those that do, they either have a preference for the older version, they don't like the new updated ISO images, so they've not upgraded to the new version. You know, it's more about, like, say, being part of the community and sharing ideas and, you know, other interests that, you know, just from their day-to-day lives as well.
Nice. That's really good. And everybody kind of sees it as their own personal, this is what I like, and if no one else likes it, they're not terribly bothered. That's really cool.
Was Crunchbang ever based on Ubuntu? I seem to have some memory of it being an Ubuntu spin at some point, or am I just completely remembering incorrectly?
No, you're remembering. I think you're the first person I've heard that's questioned whether it was ever based on Ubuntu, because it's been based on Debian now for probably, what was the first Debian version came out in February last year or this year? Hang on a minute, what's the time? Oh, I think it was last. Well, February 2011 was the first official release, non-development Debian release. So, but before that, it was based on Ubuntu. Yeah.
Care to comment on the reason for the change?
Well, seems like quite a while ago now. So, I've probably forgotten what made me really angry about Ubuntu. It made me, you know, was probably
Unity.
No, because it was to be fair, it was before Unity, and I don't, you know, and Unity was, you know, it doesn't matter anyway, because, you know, Crunchbang's always really been about providing an open box desktops, so, or environment. I was quite a happy Ubuntu user for a number of years, but I think maybe within the last 2 years or so, two or more years maybe, certain things happened with the Ubuntu community where Ubuntu, for me at least, became less about the community and being, you know, a distribution developed for the community by the community, and became more of a, well, Canonical's influence over the project became a lot stronger, I think, and that was, you could see that not only in the distribution itself, but there was certain things which were happening in packages, which it just became a bit of a pain, really, to maintain, and so I think the obvious choice was just to skip Ubuntu and move straight to Debian. And, you know, I've not regretted it at all. Debian's a great system. I use Crunchbang because I develop it for myself, so mainly. So I use it, but I still refer to myself as a Debian user.
Am I incorrect? Did I remember that you worked for Canonical at one point? Were you employed by them?
No, I've never worked for Canonical.
Okay, sorry, I don't know where that came from then.
Well, here's a question, and this might be a noob question for all I know, but it seems to me, like, let's say that I have some PowerPC boxes, which I do a lot of, and the one distro that will run on that comfortably is is Debian, because they maintain, you know, PowerPC actively. And if I wanted to say, okay, now I want to try out this Crunchbang, it seems to me like those kinds of configurations or whatever, it's really just kind of a set of packages that you hand pick. I mean, that's what it boils down to, sort of, unless I'm wrong, and correct me if I am. Have you ever Is there a way to make a distribution without making a downloadable ISO, you know, like almost some kind of, I don't know how that would be done. Maybe you see where I'm going with this and just kind of, is that something that could be done or not?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I'm not sure what, I think people's qualifications or, you know, what they define as being a distro is, you know, I think it differs from person to person. But, I mean, what I used to do for Crunchbang was I would provide a downloadable ISO image and or a script which would first of all the user would install Ubuntu, a minimal Ubuntu installation. So basically you'd just get your kernel and your userland packages, say, and then you'd wget the Crunchbang script, you'd run it as root, and basically that would set up a Ubuntu minimal install to, it would mirror the downloadable ISO. So, I mean, it's doable. I've stopped doing that for the Debian release because, well, it's just easy. To be fair, it's easier and a lot less work to work on one system. And there's certain things you can do on a you can do with a downloadable ISO, which would be a real pain in the ass, to be fair, to do, you know, just via a single script.
Gotcha. I'm not going to say Slack or Media Pokey.
Well, I love.
Darn it! I just said it.
I love Crunchbang. It's utterly stable, utterly dependable. Like I said, I've had exactly one problem with it that I can't figure out every once in a while when I put an SD card in there, it doesn't mount. And that's it. That is the sum total of problems I've ever had with the Statler release of Crunchbang. It's just fantastic.
How do you turn off the guy talking up in the top right-hand corner, the Muppet?
Lord. Why would you want to?
Statler.
Why do you want to turn him off? He's cool.
Yes, he is, but he comes up at the wrong time. And you can't get him back.
To be fair to Ken, you're not the only person that's mentioned that. And I have actually, for the latest release, it doesn't actually feature. It's still in the... All you need to do, basically, is you go to your OpenBox auto-start script. So, you know, it's in your home directory config... /openbox/autostart.sh for your release, I would think. Open that and just edit it out. It's called, there's a little script which is called CB Fortune, maybe, I think. So just comment that out and that'll stop it from appearing. But to be fair, for the last release that I put out, I just commented it out because I think there's boundaries which I'm slowly learning, which you don't want to step over, which, you know, for me, it might be fun to have a little Muppet appear in the top right-hand corner of my system, giving me a random quote, but for other people, you know, it might be a bit off-putting, so I've stopped it doing it by default, but the line's still there. If you want it on the new release, you just uncomment the line and it'll, you know, you'll get a Muppet on your system.
Wow, I thought you guys were kidding. That's hilarious. I love it. I want this.
I thought
we
that
love the Muppets.
It's a joke. I didn't know that was a serious question. I've never seen that on my system. I'm going to have to go find that line and uncomment it.
That's Statler himself, in fact, right?
Yeah, that's Statler, the old wise Muppet.
And how do you not get sued by the Linux Action Show for using him?
Probably. Or Disney.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, no, I was quite surprised, actually, because the Muppets, they're over Walt Disney now, aren't they? But, yeah, no, nobody said anything, so, but then, you know, even if they wanted to sue me, I've got no money, so I wouldn't be able to pay them.
Crunchbag.org/donations/donate.
Actually, I should probably take the opportunity to thank everybody because I've had quite a few donations over the last month or so, since I've put up. I'm trying to build a new website for the project, so to make everything a lot easier, you know. Because Crunchbang itself, it's, if you've never used it before, or you've you say come from a GNOME or a KDE environment where everything's done in the GUI, it can be maybe a little bit off-putting to new users. So I'm trying to build a new website which is more accessible, and there's more, it makes the information, key information, which I think maybe, you know, it's not hard to find that information, but I'm trying to make it, put it up front so that it's there. So when people download the image, or, you know, they download the, before they actually install it, they can get a good idea of what the system's about, so that they don't install it and then just think, oh no, this is a load of crap.
Oh man, all I do is open up Google, type how to Statler, and then I type what I'm looking for, and I've never had a problem finding, you know, what I need to get done. And I am that perpetual noob who's used to doing everything in the GUI.
I think that's one of my favorite things about CrunchBang, is that most of the settings are just hyperlinks or symlinks to the config files. So it's very explorable and helps you learn a little bit about how the different configurations for each program works.
The more you guys talk about it, the more it makes me think of Slackware, to be honest. It sounds like it's very shell script based, and keeps track of text, plain text config files that you get to edit or not, depending on your needs. It sounds pretty nice.
It's Slackware without the pain of making tea.
But I like the pain of making tea.
Oh no, Salix Slackware without the pain of making tea. Let's not shortchange them. But yeah, a lot of the things that there are to love about Slackware are the same things to love about CrunchBang, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is about CrunchBang, it's I mean, if you were to do a minimal Debian install and then install OpenBox, you know, it's not overly difficult if you know what you're doing. So, you know, from that aspect, CrunchBang, you know, it's not unusual, but what I try to do is menu. So there's items in the menus for, you know, editing pretty much every file that's associated to OpenBox. And there's, you know, there's a menu item for editing, you know, certain things such as the panel configs and, you know, Conky configs. So I try to make it as easy or as usable as possible from the beginning. Whereas if you were to try to, like I say, install or create an open box system from scratch on Debian, you know, it's actually quite a bit hard work to, you know, set it up and, you know, get it up to a nice usable state, I think. So I think, you know, from that point of view, I think CrunchBang works quite well.
Gonna have to get my husband to talk shorter sentences.
Is it clipping out for you too?
Yes.
Sorry.
Oh, no worries. It's really obvious in Audacity where it happens, and it's easy to clip that silence out. It's that's one real nice thing about Audacity, is it seems to it'll grab your cursor and bring it right to the edge of the silence, so it's real easy to clip that out of there.
Does it also edit out all of the erms?
I
often
wish.
Do. That's what takes me so long to post a show after I record it.
I was doing a... Sorry, Canonical, go ahead.
I was just going to say, who says erm?
Badum-boom. I was thinking of doing a April Fool episode where we're reviewing the Audacity feature.
Oh, nice.
I don't think anybody would get the joke except for
only the people who podcast and actually record would get it.
The auto plugin.
Would love that.
All of the erms that you edit out. All of the erms that you edit out, you should put together as a podcast and run
there
that on April Fool's Day.
You know what makes me think? Probably could edit out the ums automatically if you, because it does have that noise removal where it will sample audio and then delete that things that match that sample. Could get rid of a good bit of it.
Yeah, along with the rest of your voice during everything else you say.
Yeah, I know. When you do heavy noise removal, you really get mechanical sounding. You're right.
Yeah.
Is it not quite natural though to say
as we all say,
it really is natural to say it when you're editing yourself in a podcast. It's grating.
Okay, well, I'll take your word for it, because I don't think I've ever edited a podcast.
You're so lucky.
Yes.
And it's the funny thing is, you don't notice it when other people do it. You only notice it when you do it.
Yeah, but if you start editing ums and things out of your podcasts, I'll never get shows up here. So don't bother about that. Send them into HPR. You can edit them out when you become rich and famous. Also, I need somebody's help on setting up an Icecast relay, please. Somebody's help on setting up an Icecast relay.
Does anybody know why we say ?
It was like three people talking at once.
Yeah, I didn't hear anything that any of the three of you said.
Okay, so mine was a trivial question. As in, do we know why we say as opposed to saying something else like, I don't know. Whee!
The reason for that is it allows your brain to think, and some people say, that's a great question. If you ever hear that in interviews.
No, I think he was literally asking why that word and not another word, and I think that's cultural because in the States nobody says we say and
that's true.
That threw me off for probably at least half of
Lug Radio.
The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. When I was reading that book, I kept going, "What does mean?"
First, I heard that was Lug Radio. They used to do that a lot, and I was just like, "Why do they say it like that?" You know, it sounded weird to my ears.
Okay, yeah. 5150 was also going to say something, but before he does, I would like somebody's help in setting up an Icecast relay. If somebody could jump out of the channel, please, or meet me on IRC, that'd be great. And now over to 5150.
All I said was if my OCD will let me finish a podcast without doing it, removal, I'll probably have a bunch of them to drop into the FTP.
Yeah, me too. I've got 3 or 4 on backlog for the same reason.
When you guys do your sort of like podcasts for Hacker Public Radio, do you sort of rehearse them? Do you script them? Because obviously Philip and I are thinking of doing one and just wanted some top tips, really.
It's honestly whatever you're comfortable with. I don't ever script mine, but I notice that if I take some notes beforehand so that I don't miss anything, they tend to come out a little bit better, and that's a nice compromise between a script and a total freeform.
I suppose I would always want to sound sort of quite natural, and I always sometimes think that scripting...
You do not sound natural when you script it, but some people can make
silence?
It work.
Or is it just me?
Yeah, I can't hear too. So if this is an awkward silence, or if it's just people
Ethernet.
Are speaking and we're not hearing them.
No, I think we may actually all be out of sync.
I think I agree with you, Pokey.
I think I've got the best of everybody.
Hey, Art, what was that?
I said I think got the best of everybody.
No, I think the server's hiccuping.
Okay, but it's a very good question. For myself, thanks for the detailed tutorial episodes that I do, or haven't done in a while, but that I do where you're imparting technical information on somebody like a tutor or a how-to or something like that. Where the bash scripting guide is example, and there you need to beforehand have everything scripted, and maybe you might vary from the physical text that's written down there, but it's very much you need to do this and then you need to do that and these are the results and there's a start, middle and end. However, if you're going to be doing a show that's just a chat with a buddy, generally I'll just make a list of topic points that I want to cover, especially in an interview or something like that. Go to the website, have a look at what the topics that you want to talk about, and sort of have a leading question to okay, we want to talk about this, but you prompt them to talk about the other topic, and then you prompt them to go further and on to the next thing and on to the next thing. So everybody can do it differently. Would be a good one to have a how you record a HPO episode from a longer running host, actually.
I suppose it's more because I do public speaking anyway through my work, and I don't rehearse, I don't script, I don't have note cards, I pretty much wing it. So I was just sort of wondering how that would transcend across if ever I did any podcasting.
I think it'd be the same, because I do like one class on beginning filmmaking at the place that I work. And if it's a topic I know about, such as that, then I can speak without rehearsal, without anything like that. The only time I like rehearse or I never script, but if I outline something, then it'll be on something that I've just figured out, and I want to get the how-to down and recorded, but I don't feel like I could just do it off the top of my head. Then I outline, but otherwise I don't really do any kind of rehearsal or anything.
Yeah, I hope to God Mr. Gadgets isn't reading a script. He calls in from his car.
But he's like a professional. He's talking live from the hip. There's no editing. He has no way to edit any of his shows. It's just pick up the phone, talk,
I can't even comprehend
that's what comes
that.
Up.
That is so hardcore. I aspire to that.
You're doing it now.
Don't tell me that.
The whole world is watching and you're doing it now.
Oh, good gosh.
There's a real lack of lady podcasters, though, do you not think?
Amen.
Yes.
Amen. However, we do have a few here on HPR, which I'd like to see them or whoever, our community members of the female variety.
I mean, to be fair, those women people are more common, I think, in other podcasting realms. Like, if I go out and listen to, like, sci-fi or fantasy novel podcasts, like the short story podcasts,
yep,
you hear women all over the place. So they're there. They're just not in the Linux podcasting necessarily. Although, yeah, there are. They do exist here, too. But not – yeah. So it's not everywhere. It's just here.
There are so many women involved in the Linux community or in the open source community. I mean, if we take OggCamp that both me and Ken went to, you know, it was definitely 50-50 for women and blokes there, and they weren't just accompanying their husbands.
Wow, that's 50-50? Honestly?
That's
would you
cool.
say it was 50-50?
There were an awful lot of ladies there.
There were, yeah, but I wouldn't say it was 50-50.
My gosh. I've only been to one Linux Fest, and there were only two women there, and they were married to the dudes running.
Well, if
yeah,
you look at the lady presenters,
weird.
You had Lorna
Jane, I was
going to
say embarrassing.
Karen
but...
Sandler, you had Laura Kachowski.
Yeah, true enough, but they're just geeks.
For sure. That's so cool.
And exactly.
Lady
they,
geeks.
No, there's no distinction. They're just hackers like everybody else. And that's actually one of the things, you know, if we want to talk about HBR, is that I've noticed different people from different cultures, different countries come on to the network over the last year. And I think that's something I also want to encourage. So it's cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'll have to do you a knitting podcast for HBR.
And, you know, laugh all you want, but Pokey's mom, who still owes me a podcast for last year and owes me one for next year as well, although last year she did the intro, so she's off. But tell her that she owes me a podcast for next year as well. But she's a seamstress, and so a lot of our wide and varied audience.
I run my local Linux user group, and I take my knitting along.
I think there's a big crossover. I know a couple of people into Linux. Oh, that was funny, wasn't it? No, but I know a couple of people into Linux who are not just casual knitters. I know one girl who actually makes her own yarn with a spinning wheel. Can you beat that?
I have a spinning wheel upstairs in my house. Yep. I'm
nice.
Not a witch.
She isn't either, as far as I know.
I've met you.
I am a witch.
I think that's politically incorrect. I think you're supposed to say Wiccan.
I think a knitting podcast, like something on how to get started in it, not only would be great for the community, but it would be fantastic for me personally, because my wife just last night walked into the kitchen with, I mean, like a cubic meter. I'm trying to be like worldly here, like a cubic meter of yarn. And she said, I'm going to learn how to make this blanket.
Why is it that these subjects always come around to when guys are talking about them? It's my wife and my girlfriend. Is that just a little shameless secret?
No, I'll tell you why. Because when I was... pipe my music, can you play that Wayback music again, please, that you had before? Give you a few seconds to do that. When
it was a personal dig, Thistle Web. I love it and I accept it, but no, I get no problem with dating. I would do it if I had a use for the product that came out at the end. Like I just got some paracord. I don't know if anybody knows what that is, but I wove my own rifle sling. So as long as what's coming out at the end, I can weave that stuff. I can learn, no problem.
Nah, dude, it wasn't anything personal. I'm trying to be funny. I mean, when I make digs at that, it's intentionally to be funny. So if anyone takes it any other way, I do apologize in advance.
Personal was the wrong word, because I meant if it was a joke at me, then I certainly welcome it. And I love being the brunt of jokes, so absolutely.
However, I wanted to learn knitting guts when I was in national school, which is, I don't know, the first school you go into. I was in a class with, yeah, primary education. I don't know what it is in the States, but anyway.
Elementary school or grade school.
Yeah, there were only girls in my class, right? So they all got to go off every Friday afternoon and learn knitting. And I got to stay in the boys' class by myself learning additional maths, which, of course, was no use to me.
That's horrible.
That's very true of the British education system because, you know, Ken, I'm sure you're probably a similar age to me. And you're right. You know, when I was at school, it was home economics or domestic science. And for the gentlemen, for the boys, it was metalwork.
At least metalwork would have been useful, but I mean, every time it really annoys me that I see people knitting, invariably girls or females, and I feel like I'm cheated out of that. That's a useful thing that I could have learned practically in school that I wasn't able to. And at the time, I asked the teacher, you know, can I do this? No, you're a boy, but that's stupid.
Yeah,
just stereotyping.
I remember my mum and dad talking about that, and the one thing my mum got out of it was the fact that she learned to type with a typewriter because girls of her age at school were supposed to be, the work you were supposed to do was be a secretary, which meant that by the time she got round to getting a computer, she was already pretty fluent with a typewriter. She was just scared stiff, I was going to swear there, scared stiff of the actual computer part. So at least it gave her one good life skill.
Actually, and you brought up my second peeve. In college, I wasn't allowed to do typing because that was a girl's thing.
Are you serious? Where did you go to college?
Boston.
I
don't think it's where. I think it's when.
Yeah, that's more like
a generational thing.
For some reason, I thought there was a Doctor Who thing there coming in. I was like, it's not where, it's when. Because I can imagine a Time Lord going back in time to do a particular exam.
If we're talking about personal gripes, I can't help but mention this one. Ken, you asked what they call primary school or elementary school in the States, and it's funny.
And what?
They used to call it grammar anymore, so changed it to primary school or elementary school.
We have high schools and grammar schools.
But that is more of a class thing here, I think, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, we've got places where kids go to learn the exams and then get bits of paper saying they've passed exams, and then they come out highly qualified with bits of paper, but know absolutely nothing.
We call that university.
Here's my cert. Where's my office?
Yeah, there's been a bunch of protests based on that recently. Sorry, I didn't mean to turn it political.
No, I think that was me that turned the political there. I do apologise. So, what were we discussing before I so rudely killed the conversation?
Finished talking about Crunchbang.
Crunchbang. That's, funnily enough, that's what I'm using at the moment.
So is everyone else in here, apparently.
Except you, Clatoo.
I feel so...
You're heaving.
Yeah.
We still have many hours left on this thing. You can redeem yourself.
Nah. Can I just say, I think me and Becky and I joined the conversation a bit late.
No, I didn't think to track that.
Yeah, hey, Corn Nominal, you and Becky joined the conversation a bit late, and then there was nothing else.
You know what's going to happen? Someone with good audio typing skills is going to sit down and play the whole 24-hour OGG file and transcribe it.
Clarty?
Suddenly I'm
can
a
you
touch...
Can you use Emacs for that?
yeah, probably, but I'm not going
to. However, joking aside, thanks to this web for bringing up something I wanted to talk about, was accessibility and Hacker Public Radio.
Can we let Cornominal finish that last point first before we move on? Because I didn't hear what he was trying to say.
I had a point?
I don't know. You started to say something and then your audio just completely failed.
What he was saying was we know that you've been online certainly UK time since 5 p.m. and we didn't come on until a couple of hours. So we were just wondering, is there a log of the subjects that have been discussed that we missed?
Not that I'm aware of, but if you got something you want to bring up, don't worry about if it's been talked about before, because people are hopping on and off of the chat as well as the the stream, I'm sure.
Oh, no, nothing in particular, but you know, I didn't want to start, you know, bringing raising topics which has already been discussed. Plus, is there sort of like because you guys are doing this for how long? 12.
Yeah, 12 hours.
12 hours, yeah, that's a long time. Have you got like a list of topics that you're going to be discussing?
No, we may have done that had we planned it out better, but since the planning was all left up to me, none of that kind of thing got done.
Well, to be fair, this is a bold idea by Pokey, and this is the first time we've done this. So yeah, I think next year that might be a really good thing to remember.
Well, hopefully you'll get some good material from it for some future shows. And, like I say, use the feedback from this year for next year.
Yeah, that's the general idea.
You know, I would love to be a fly on the wall for whoever's editing this and how they're going to split the one file down into, well, we've got an episode here, right? We've got this subject here. This half hour was good here. I would love to be a fly on the wall for whoever's editing this.
We voted you to edit it. You weren't here for that?
You're a comedian.
I think we're just going to script FFmpeg to chop it up in 20-minute intervals and just release it like that. Doesn't matter if we cut people off in the mid-sentence. We'll just release them as 20-minute episodes.
Yeah, cliffhangers. You
know, that's seriously looking a bad idea.
You know, yes, would be.
You know what you could do? You know how you've got some audio files that's got end of part one, please turn the cassette over and play part two. You could have random little clips at the end of that so that it cuts into someone's sentence and then a little robotic voice says, end of part one, please insert part two into your player.
Well, here's something. If anybody's actually doing a single track recording and you know, doesn't mind listening to the whole thing at some point at, you know, maybe high speed, they could just send me timestamps of good spots to cut it, and that would cut down on editing, you know, by a lot.
Well, I'm doing a single track recording, but I'm cutting it at like an hour or an hour and a half. I'm stopping it and restarting it just to make the files more manageable once I pull them into audio editor.
Yeah, I've been doing that with my single track recording too, just stopping it and restarting it. I can't do that with my multi-track recording because each one has 15 files.
Yeah, if you guys could put the single track ones up on the FTP server, and we'll pimp them so that people might be able to do that.
Yeah, but it won't matter. It won't matter because the timestamps won't. We don't have a standard timestamp now because my track might break at one point, and someone else's will break at another. So if I send them a time code, then that's not going to mean anything.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to physically use it, but you'll be able to find it in Audacity.
It can. It can work, Klaatu, because I can take the one that I have. It's unbroken except for the short pauses. I can stitch them back together and upload a 12-hour file, and then people could, you know, listen through at high speed and just say, hey, break it off at roughly 20 minutes or at roughly 45 minutes in or something like that. That would be fine. I mean, that would it would help me tremendously.
Yeah, okay. Approximate, yeah.
No, the funny thing is, when you guys were all talking about multiple recordings, and cutting it and, you know, stopping it and restarting it, and the thing that came to my mind was, do you worship to the great god of Audacity? One 24-hour file, and just when the show's about to be finished, you find Audacity crashes on you and you lose the...
No, in the rare occasions that I've caused Audacity to crash by doing something stupid, it has recovered gracefully is not even a good enough word for it.
Yeah, I've had the same experience. I think I probably had like a catastrophic Audacity crash in some point in my life, although I don't remember it, so I could be making it up. But I imagine it would be when I was running a beta version of Audacity when I shouldn't have been. I don't usually mess around with my multimedia applications. I don't run the latest and greatest for that very reason.
Yeah, in fairness to Audacity, I mean, I've seen it crashing quite a lot, but it always recovers and it opens the files just as they were. It might crash a lot, but it does recover. So technically, you don't really lose anything.
What distro are you running Audacity on that it's crashing? Because I haven't had an Audacity crash in a couple of years.
Same here.
Until I installed Mint last night and tried it on Mint.
I've not actually used Audacity in a while. For Crivens, it's Kevy that does the recording, and I'm just on Mumble, essentially, here. But, I mean, I've tried it on the Crunchbang and Ubuntu, Mint, Debian, with mixed success. And I've just remembered that it did crash a lot at certain times. But as I say, I've not really used it that much recently, so...
You might... I don't know if you guys do a lot of multi-tracking, but if you do multi-tracking... Get over three or four multi-tracks, and it gets really hairy. It starts crashing then a lot.
Sure, okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
You've just put the fear of God into me. I just told you I got 16 tracks, at least.
Relax, pray to the great God Audacity. He is merciful. And on that note, I'm going to top my drink up. I'll be back in a minute.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HPR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All BinRev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.